Hello and welcome to yet another Compass Live hosted by myself and Zach Bull, the only and therefore the best live stream dedicated to proof of work Bitcoin mining. Today we have two amazing guests lined up to talk about Bitcoin mining in Latin America, specifically Argentina and Venezuela. I'd like to welcome Juan Pinto, co-founder of Venezuelan Pool Dr. Miner, to the show, and Nick D'Amico, CTO of Argentine Bit Patagonia. Juan, Nick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Zach.
And to Zach, of course.
Thank you for the invite.
Thanks for jumping on with us.
This is a ton of fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, just a little note, be sure to like and subscribe on our YouTube channel for more streams as they pop up. Of course, we do this twice a week with a lot of amazing guests. So Juan, Nick, we're going to start off with a little segment called Shill Your Bags. Zach came up with this with a few weeks ago, and I think it was a really awesome way to just kind of intro you guys into the live stream. You know, we have a lot of people on here that people don't know about. So Juan, we want to start with you. Tell us like what Dr. Miner is, how you got into the Bitcoin space, and what you do at Dr. Miner, and then Nick will go on to your segment next.
Well, so Dr. Miner is a Venezuelan mining company. We are dedicated exclusively to Bitcoin mining since 2016. We started mining actually Ether at the beginning. Like every domestic miner starts with GPUs, which is less noisy. So after we started growing and we started like industrializing, we started to get in contact with ASIC machines and then with Bitcoin mining. At the end, we were like more linked with proof of work than Bitcoin mining only. But then as we grew, we started understanding what was like, which one has a more long-term vision. And also because Ethereum wanted to switch to proof of stake, since they were born, they've been trying to switch, but they haven't yet. I don't know why. So we didn't feel confident about mining Ether anymore. So we switched to Bitcoin only since 2018. So we started mining at home because Venezuela is a very special place for domestic mining. I mean, people mine at their houses everywhere here. It's very common. So that's how we started. We started selling miners to people in their houses, like literally in their bedrooms. And from there, we got some clients that wanted to build something bigger. And then we started building larger farms and started understanding how big this industry is and how important it is for the energy industry specifically.
Awesome. Thanks for that. Nick, show your bags to us. We want to hear what you guys are up to.
I'll show my bags. So in terms of Bit Patagonia, the company started in 2017. Obviously, it was the bull run when everybody was trying to get into mining. I think, in my opinion, it was the worst possible time to get into mining. The company did not do too well for the first 2-3 years. Given that, like I said, it came onto a bull run when Bitcoin was at 20,000. Bitcoin crashed to 3,500. And we trudged through it, kept growing while Bitcoin was in its bearish market. We expanded operations, bought new miners, and right now enjoying the fruits of our labor and pushing forwards. We started mining a little bit of everything, whatever we could get our hands on in terms of ASICs at the time. I wasn't in the company at the beginning. There was another technical lead who purchased basically S9s, L3s, GPUs, and a little bit of everything, mix and match. When I came onto the company, basically I did an analysis of how much each coin or each blockchain represented in terms of work, manual labor, maintaining the miners, how much each miners were consuming versus how much they were producing. And eventually we decided to just focus on Bitcoin, given that diversifying meant that we had to have different parts, that we had to have different miners, that we had to have different sectors in the data center, that we had to have different wires depending on the consumption. So basically, we just standardized our entire operation to mine Bitcoin. So now we're focusing specifically on mining Bitcoin. We offer some blockchain solutions to cover basically the employability factor of having a large mining operation and to have more employees on the company. So we're developing blockchain solutions for local companies in Argentina and for some American companies as well. So basically, a little bit of mining and a little bit of developing on blockchain.
That's awesome. It's always interesting to me, like the common trajectory of mining companies, where like so many people start out mining Ether and other, and then, you know, they sort of converge, like both of you pretty much said, on either Bitcoin and Ether or just Bitcoin. Awesome. So I'll jump in here with the first question. I kind of want to give our viewers and listeners, for those who are listening on the podcast later, like a lay of the land. So we see, you know, a lot of headlines about mining in different parts of Latin America, from, you know, in El Salvador, volcanoes and geothermal energy, so much hydropower all over. I'll hand it back to you, Nick, and then to you, Juan, also. Can you guys give us like just a high level overview of where the hubs of mining are across Latin America right now, where you see the most activity in terms of actual hash power and businesses being incorporated across the map of Latin America? Like where's the most activity right now?
Absolutely. So in terms of El Salvador, I think it's a very early stage in terms of mining, given that they have geothermal power that's being built out right now. In terms of mining, I don't know of any large operations that are happening there right now. In terms of larger mining operations that we've seen in person or seen in videos, we've seen Venezuela, we've seen Paraguay, which has a huge amount of hydroelectric power. It obviously has its lobbying and political issues like any other Latin American company. Argentina is also growing pretty steadily in terms of expansion and power capacity for miners. Basically, when Bit Patagonia started, we were the second mining company to start in Argentina. Right now, according to basically tax documents and what we know, there's around 40 large operations in Argentina.
Awesome. Yeah, same question to you, Juan. Like, what's the landscape look like at a high level? Where are the main hubs of mining?
Well, to me, I think Venezuela is one of the oldest in terms of, let's say, mining industrially, because Venezuela has a very cheap electricity price, not cheap, but free. I mean, since 2012 until 2019, it was literally free. So it was a no-brainer. So people started mining here in their houses. They're starting growing industrial farms, industrial infrastructures, but the energy company realized about it, and now they're charging. And it's still the cheapest in the world, but it's not free anymore. So, but the reason why Venezuela, I think, it's one of the largest, is one with the largest hash rate capacity installed, is because energy was extremely cheap, almost free, like for 8 years. At the moment, I think Venezuela has around 2x the hashes. I think the second will be Paraguay. I'm not really sure about Argentina. I don't know if Argentina reaches 1x the hash already or still under an exahash. Nick will know better. I don't know if he knows that number. I know Paraguay already exceeded an exahash. I mean, I don't know certain, but I did some research and I collected some data about it. And I think Venezuela will be first in terms of capacity, and then second will be Paraguay, and third Argentina. They always talk about El Salvador. They don't mine at all, but, you know, they may be on legal tender. And, I mean, I suppose they will install some capacity there. There's a potential there, even though they have the volcanoes, but they don't have enough capacity, energy capacity. I think they only have, I mean, Kelly said, I don't know, 2 months ago that they have 98 megawatts available with volcanoes. Well, Paraguay has like 5,000 megawatts available, and Venezuela at least 1,000. So it's not comparable in terms of magnitude, but in terms of, let's say, legality or legal framework, yeah, it can be a potential place, but it's not a mining hub right now. It's a potential mining hub in the future.
Yeah, I want to jump in there. So, Nick, that's really interesting that you said 40 large-scale operations in Argentina. So, like, we're taking a look at this map. This is from Cambridge Bitcoin. They did like a little study in April. They published it, and they've done this for 2 or 3 years now. And looking at the network hash rate that from April 2021, of course, this data has changed a lot since then, but we see that Argentina on this map has 0.01% of the Bitcoin network's hash rate. Venezuela isn't far behind. Surprisingly, Brazil has more, even though I've heard of not very many operations there. And I'd love correction on that. Paraguay is a little bit ahead of both Venezuela and Argentina. So could you like give us a little more info from what you've seen, like how many exahash are in Argentina? Is there an expectation for that number to grow? And then since April, has this number changed a lot? And would you view these numbers at Cambridge as publicly right now as incorrect or near correct?
No, I would say it's definitely near correct. In terms of Brazil, I haven't heard anything like you. I think it's probably operations that are trying to stay under the radar somehow. It might even be government operations. It's something that I don't have too much knowledge on. In terms of Argentina growing, and in terms of the hash rate that they have there, I would estimate Argentina being around 1 exahash, 1.5 tops. Argentina's grown quite a bit in terms of mining, given the basically financial instability that the country has, that's even pushed more because of COVID. And people are looking for better investments. People are looking for a more stable currency, or a currency that grows faster than the dollar, which the dollar isn't growing at all, but compared to the dollar versus the peso. And basically, we've seen a lot of home miners growing quite a bit, and then scaling up to actually setting up mines. We know of mines in Buenos Aires. We know of mines in Cordoba. We know of mines in Tierra del Fuego as well. And basically, from what we've been seeing in terms of imports, the miners are just scaling up. It's just going through the roof, the amount of miners that they're importing to Argentina.
Interesting. Yeah. I sort of get that vibe from a bunch of different places, which is why I wanted to get, you know, like a high level overview of the landscape. And not even just in Latin America, like people are shipping ASICs pretty much wherever they can find rack space at this point. But Nick, you mentioned some growth during COVID, and I kind of wanted to touch on any and all like effects that, you know, the past year and a half or so has had on certain mining operations, to the best of your knowledge. I know Bit Patagonia has had some experience with limiting operations and that sort of stuff based on local government mandates. Can you just like tell us, and Juan, I want to know also the effect, if any, on Dr. Miner and how basically the whole COVID situation has affected mining operations for both of you. But first, Nick, to you, can you give us like the summary of what you guys experienced, how you worked through it, moved past it, and what that was like?
So basically last year was a huge year for us purchasing miners, given that it was a halving. So basically we were pushing to order as many miners as fast as possible. COVID already destroyed our plans of making any deadline, given that ports were closing in China, ports were closing in Argentina, ports were closing in the middle, airlines were canceling all their flights. So getting any kind of cargo flight became a logistical nightmare. Luckily, we managed to get our miners to Argentina 2 months after the deadline, basically, and started plugging in the miners around September, October. And around that time, part of our operation is an industrial zone in Tierra del Fuego, which there was a problem with the government, which basically there was a stay-at-home order, but factories were staying open and people were going to work. So the government pushed the factories to close and basically just shut their power off. So what that caused is our power getting shut off as well in part of our operation. Even though it was fairly easy to keep social distance. It was easy to keep any kind of protocol to avoid any kind of infection, given that mining is relatively simple to follow any protocol. But yeah. Given our zoning and where we were physically, that basically caused the problems of getting our power shut down for a month. While the government was trying to get a protocol in order for people to be able to go back to work. So that was quite an issue, and it was very, very stressful getting the miners from China to Argentina.
A whole month is quite a long time there. How much, or if any, did they give you like any notice, or was it just sort of instant?
It was one day to another. Something that we did was we managed to maintain the power on in Argentina, given that in Tierra del Fuego, during the pandemic, they weren't charging residential clients for the power, given that they were staying home, they were working from home, and we kept paying our bills, even though the power shut off, for example. So basically to try to help move the situation forward.
Wow, that does not sound like any fun at all.
It was stressful. It was very stressful.
I can imagine. Juan, to you also, has like COVID and like COVID related, you know, restrictions and policies and things have had any effect on your operations, expansion, even just like maintaining uptime, that sort of stuff? And if so, like, what has it been like for you?
Yeah, well, in terms of energy stability, we had better luck than Nick. We did have stable power throughout the COVID pandemic. There was no problem at all with that. The main problem was with transportation internally in the country from state to state to transport materials and stuff. Because we were building farms at the moment. I mean, we were caught in the middle of an 8-megawatt construction, which for us it's really pretty big size. I mean, we're not like Chinese that are building 100-megawatt farms. Like, 8 megawatts is already very big for us. And so at the moment, we just have to build like a small house or a small apartment inside the farm, literally for the workers to stay there and live there. And like they literally stay there for 2 months. We have a cook and everything there for them not to leave the place, because like police were everywhere with stops and not allowing people to move from one place to the other. But that lasted around 3 months after we finished the project, and then everything started like smoothing out here. At the end in Venezuela, the pandemic, it's not to be taken so seriously. I don't know why. I mean, it hasn't affected us that much, actually.
Interesting. Anything to keep those machines on, though. So I kind of want to turn over to the infrastructure side. And Nick, it's interesting that you guys are all the way down in Patagonia. And I don't think anyone here, or maybe if Juan does for unknown reasons, has knowledge of how like the energy grid works down all the way south in Patagonia, especially since it's such like a rugged terrain. I'm wondering just specifically about infrastructure challenges, though. Does it come down to importing ASICs? Does it come down to getting the transformers out there distributing energy? Is it like a technical issue finding the right people to help you guys build your business down there? What's kind of a key bottleneck? I guess we could put a positive spin on it too. What's something that you guys have in abundance that makes mining Bitcoin easy in Patagonia? And then Juan, I'll go to you with the same question afterwards.
Of what you listed, absolutely everything is a hassle. And it's not on the mainland of the continent. It's an island, which makes it even more complicated because there's no crossings, there's no bridges, there's ferries, and there's airplanes. And that's about everything. So in terms of getting transformers, it's a nightmare. In terms of getting the miners, it's a nightmare. Everything is trucked down to Patagonia. There's one road, one national road, which runs from the north of the island all the way down to the south. So if it snows too much, they're locked in. It's quite an issue to have any kind of infrastructure shipped there. But we managed to solve it. We already have everything pretty polished, and the process is polished. In terms of when the company started in 2017 and 2018, obviously there wasn't a precedent or a class that you could study on how to make a mining operation. So basically there was a huge learning curve, and we had teams of hundreds of people building out the infrastructure. Then we had to do some modifications as well. So that was quite an issue. And in terms of power, power is pretty well distributed in the island. There's three cities. There's two large cities, one called Ushuaia and one called Rio Grande, which are the large cities. And then there's Toluín, which is right in the middle. Our operations are in Ushuaia and Rio Grande, which are the two larger cities. So it's relatively simple in terms of the distribution of power in those cities. We're on the edge of the city, so it's not too much of an issue in terms of noise and in terms of anything like that. We're in the industrial sector, so that's not too much of an issue. And in terms of abundance, being in Patagonia, there's an abundance of cold. So it's all natural cooling. Basically, it's just getting cold air in, pushing the hot air out. And something that we're seeing, which is quite a complication, is we're getting some blowback in terms of global warming. For example, it's getting warmer and warmer every year, and it's accelerating. And there's basically, we have a lot of plans and protocols based on what month we're in and what day we're in. And those are basically shifting quite a bit in the last 2 years, for example. So it's interesting.
A follow-up question there. What is like the distinct geographic or infrastructure blessing that your area has that enables Bitcoin mining or like drew you guys to the area? Is it like the cold weather that kind of is an impetus for putting Bitcoin miners like all the way down south, literally at the edge of South America?
Yeah, it's the wind and the cold, basically. It's a combination of cold wind. There was already fiber optic infrastructure on the island, which basically facilitated a little bit of being able to mine. And there was some power capacity, which we're looking at how to better that power capacity on the island and getting better at using it more efficiently.
Awesome. Juan, I'm going to ask you the same question. When we had you on the podcast, I think in April, your response was that it was really hard to get ASICs into Venezuela. Wondering if that's changed at all, and maybe you could expound on why getting ASICs into Venezuela is tough.
Yeah, well, right now it's not as tough, but it's expensive. As I said, I mean, I always say that Venezuela is the only country in the world that has like a government body dedicated only to regulating mining specifically. I don't think anywhere in the world there is like a specific building in the middle of Caracas, the middle of the capital, where all the main government buildings are. So like the legal framework is really clear, or at least it's clear for all the parts. I mean, I know what I have to do to get things done. But for import, the import process wasn't as clear as the last time we spoke. But right now, they already fixed a rate for miners, which I think it's really high, at 33% taxes to get the miners in. But at the end, it's a negotiation. They say 33%, but then, I mean, you can negotiate with them. Depends on the machines you're bringing. You can say they've been used for a long time. And, I mean, it's like everything in Latin America. It's not only in Venezuela. Latin America is all about negotiation. And, you know, you talk to them and, you know, you give them a chocolate and then you give them a machine. This is how it works here, to try to get a better rate for import, because they know, and actually they even know what the Bitcoin price is. So depends on the Bitcoin price, they may charge you more or less on the taxes. So it's that crazy how it works here. They're very well familiar with the machines, with all the models there are, with the Bitcoin price, how much money are the machines making. And so based on that, they charge you the import cost, which I think that was the last thing that needed to be settled. At least it's already settled. So after you import the machines, you need to get all the licenses. You need to get a license for the farm and a license for the miner, which is like the hosting license is a license for the license for the farm, and the use mining is the license for the miner. If I have a farm and I want to host miners, I get a license for my farm, which means that my farm was technically feasible. It's technically feasible. It has the energy available. Like I'm getting energy from an abundant resource. I mean, there's enough energy for me to take that, and I'm not taking energy from a neighbor industry, because there's so many factories here that have been stopped. So what I do is I go to industrial areas, like, I don't know, shoe factories or cloth factories, automobile factories that have been stopped with the situation here in Venezuela, the economic situation. And I use that excess power to mine. I make a contract. I partner with the building owner or the warehouse owner to run an operation there, and I give him a part of the profits from the hosting business. So like, you need to get the permits and the license from the energy company and the government regulator that says that it's actually true, that energy is available there, that you're good to go. So this process can take time if you don't have like the expertise to create the project that you need to submit. So that's why there's so many news. I mean, you read the news about the police seizing equipment and going to the farms and seizing the machines from the miners. It's because they don't get the permits, they don't get the licenses. It's a sad story, because it's something that's happening at the moment, but these are the rules of the game. The good thing is that, and that's something really, really good that just recently happened, and it happened because altogether, all the mining companies, because the other good thing is that Venezuela has, it's not only Dr. Miner, we have already 10, at least 10 Bitcoin mining companies, being 5 the most important ones. So we have voices to rise, and so we can speak to the regulator and complain about whatever is happening, even if it wasn't affecting me. We were complaining about why the police were seizing the equipment, if they were under the process of getting the license and the permits from the energy supplier. And the government regulator, the government body, submitted like an official document and a statement saying that if any police force, I can show you that document because it's historic for me. I mean, I literally I celebrated for 2 days because of that. They said that if any police force or any Sikh, because it's a secret police, even the secret police is the one that's more hurting the most. If they ever seize any farm without the permission from the government body, regulated mining, if they do it just like violently without permission and stuff, they will get 5 years prison. So this has like calmed everything down. Like the police are being more careful now. If they ever go and do any audit to the farm, they need to get permission from the regulator. They need to ask first if they are on the process of getting the license. So if they're in the process, they're still good to mine, or at least they just have to turn off the farm. They cannot get the equipment from the miners. They cannot get bitcoins from the miners, because that was what the police was doing. They were bribing the miners. Like, you're mining illegally, so I'm going to take you to jail. No. So, you know, they were threatening them. Okay, I'm not taking you to jail, but you have to give me 100 of your miners and give me 5 bitcoins. This is my wallet. This is how it was working. And it was like the Wild West. And now after this document, and even it was like a presidential, it was signed even by the president. It was a really good news for us now that the police is not able to do these kind of things anymore, because they will be punished. Before, there was no official rule for them. Now they have like a punishment in hand.
That's awesome. I didn't know all the details behind that. I think when we were in Miami together last, we talked about this a little bit. But it's kind of what I wanted to jump into next. There's a huge focus, obviously, on different regions' regulatory landscapes right now after, you know, China just kind of turned about face and kicked everyone out. And so now all miners are especially relocating from China, are trying to find ones with favorable regulations. And for Juan and Nick, I'm curious. I know, Juan, you just gave us sort of like the lowdown on regulations in Venezuela for mining. I'm curious if you can give us, you know, both like Nick, summary of, you know, the regulatory landscape where you're operating, and then Juan and Nick, like maybe the biggest misconception in terms of how different regulatory environments treat miners across Latin America, specifically in Argentina and Venezuela. Because it seems like it's similar in some ways to how different states in the U.S. treat miners. Like there's some competition between states and countries, and some states obviously treat them a lot better than other states and countries and that sort of thing. Juan, I'll pass it back to you. And then Nick, Juan, what do you think is like the biggest misconception in terms of how miners are regulated and treated in Venezuela from, you know, people like me who aren't operating in that country and don't visit frequently?
Yeah, well, so there are some things that people read on the news that are absolutely true, but they don't go deeper into what actually happened. You know, sometimes when you see news about farms getting seized, it's because some of these farms are using free power. I mean, they don't deserve jail. Well, at least they don't think they deserve jail, but they deserve to get shut down. The reality is that things are improving, and that's not being said. The reality is that the government regulator is trying to make Bitcoin mining an official industry, an official activity, and not only official, but also a key activity for the country's improvement, the country's economic recovery. So like people think that in Venezuela, the biggest threat is like not only the police, but also like normal insecurity. And actually the biggest threat is just the police getting seizing mining and threatening miners and getting the miners from them. But right now, if you have all the paperwork in your hands, if you do all the due diligence, you're safe to mine. You have like all the protection, all the legal protection from the regulators, from the government regulators. Stuff can happen, of course, but the percentage or the probability that something will happen is extremely a lot lower than people think. Because if you have the paperwork, maybe they will make you pass a bad time. I know 5 hours, you know, waiting at the farm for you to show them the documents and prove to them that they're legal or that they're legit. But it's just that it would be a day or for 5 hours, and then you'll be mining for a year with extremely good energy prices, with good stability. I mean, not the best, but at least 91% uptime in your farm. This is what we offer for hosting clients. I think 91% for 2.5 cents for hosting. I think it's really attractive. I don't see why people will be will be scared about mining here. But I understand that people think that their machines are going to get stolen. We are already working on an insurance for the miners so that people can be more confident about sending miners here. We already have interest from international clients, from Europe specifically and from China after we all know what happened with the Chinese crackdown and after the Mining Disrupt conference that we went there to offer Latin America as a potential place. We've already been, you know, trying to convince them. And the only way actually to convince the international clients that mining in Venezuela is not as dangerous as people think is if they come here and say they see our operations and they see how we do it, they see how we get things done, how we manage risk and how we get the paperwork and all the capabilities that we have and what's the reality with the energy sources too and all the abundance that there is. I mean, you see all the factories being stopped with 4 megawatts, 5 megawatts, 6 megawatts capacity lying down there, wasted resources that mining can use and transform into benefits even from the people around. Like we create jobs in the places where we build our farms. It's people that were unemployed, that didn't have money to put food on the table for their family. Now they found a decent job in an industry that's growing exponentially, not only in Venezuela, but worldwide.
Yeah, for sure. We had a quick question in the chat about Venezuela's energy costs. And, you know, 2.5, 3 cents with over 90% uptime is pretty competitive, very competitive. That's super interesting to hear about, you know, assurances if you have all the paperwork sorted and stuff. Nick, same question to you. Like, can you give us a summary of the regulatory situations, pros and cons you face, and then maybe like key misconceptions in terms of how miners are treated and operate?
In terms of Argentina, as long as you pay your taxes and declare what you're doing, it's all fine. It's taken like any other industry or any other manufacturing. You consume power, you produce something, you pay taxes on that something if you sell it for a higher profit, and you just pay basically what would be income tax. Right now, it's pretty informal. There's not something specific for miners. I know a few laws being drawn up specifically for miners, given that it's a new industry. It's something that the government is interested in regulating as much as possible. There's so much they can do, so much they can't do, luckily. So basically, there's that. It's just taken like any other industry. Like you said before, in terms of states having different regulations and having different, making it easier or harder to get into mining, obviously, you have to get a permit to be able to consume the amount of power that we would be consuming. So there's provinces that make it easier than others. There's different taxes in different provinces depending on how much power you consume, what your income is as a company, what your costs are. So basically, it's taken like any other business in Argentina. In terms of inspections, we've had some random inspections, nothing too risky or too, what would be the right word, too intimidating. Basically, it's just been the government trying to see how they could regulate the industry.
Awesome. So I'm gonna keep pulling on like this thread about regulation, because we both know that like Venezuela and Argentina have had a rough history when it comes to currency and currency control. Argentina, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but around 2001 had a defaulting on its debts and then had a history of doing that to the detriment of its citizens. Juan, obviously in Venezuela, also had like a hyperinflationary event over the last 5 years. So I'm wondering how much has interest in Bitcoin mining as an industry been pushed forward by these like issues with the currency? Or do you see that there's just more general interest in Bitcoin writ large, like on the exchange side or purchasing it or buying other tokens, as opposed to just like moving into the Bitcoin mining industry? Do these like inflationary events or currency events like push Bitcoin mining as an industry within the country? Juan, I guess I'll start with you for that one.
Yeah, also the Venezuelan national currency is currently non-existent. I mean, it exists, but people aren't using it anymore. Before they freed the dollar because it was exchange control here, like, people were not free to use dollars or foreign currencies in the country. It was not legal. And so the only option people had since 2014 until 2019 was cryptocurrency. That's why we started mining so early. That's why we got so much traffic in local Bitcoins. I mean, we used to be, I think we still are one of the number one Bitcoin volume transactions, more retail transactions, small transactions, where people are using it like on a daily basis. So I wouldn't say it's only Bitcoin mining. I mean, it has impacted everything, like for buying and purchasing goods and services, to also generating extra profit from your salary, which is in bolivars. So people are earning their salaries in bolivars. They also have a mining machine in their house, you know, to compensate for the inflation on their salary. So I think Venezuela was forced to use Bitcoin since the exchange controls, since the collapse of our national currency. That I don't know if you've heard that we've erased 7 zeros. I think it's going to be already 12 zeros from the currency. I mean, one bolivar should be around, I know, $1 trillion right now. I'm sorry, the opposite. $1 will be like 1 trillion bolivars at the moment, but they've erased like 12 zeros, something like that, in order to keep it like more realistic, or to people not to freak out that much, and for people to be easier to transact. So it all started with that. It all started with people being forced to use an alternative, which was Bitcoin, and then people mining in their houses. And since then, now that the people that were mining at their houses started growing and then going industrial as we did, I think other investors, not only because of the inflation of the bolivar, have looked at the potential of mining as a way to transform the huge amount of resources that Venezuela has, despite the economic situation, into hard money and into prosperity, or into just like a better investment than just having the money in the bank or invested in other projects that they were familiar with in the past.
Is it like common to walk into a home and see like a miner, or is that kind of uncommon?
Yeah, it's really common in not only houses, but also like, I don't know, shops, like any kind of shops. I'm going to tell you just a short story. I went like 2 weeks ago, Saturday, I went to the dentist. I think it was a month ago because there was a football match. So I left the dentist and I went to a bar, a small bar near the shopping mall to watch the game. And while I was watching the game, I was hearing the noise of ASIC machines running. But I didn't listen to it. I was wearing this same shirt. And I was watching the match, and I was with a friend who also works in Dr. Mario. He was saying to me, "Man, I think there are miners in the back. They have miners running in the back." And I said, "Yeah, I don't care." And then after the match, when I went to pay, the guy who was the owner of the bar, it was a very small bar, he told me, do you work with mining, right? Because you're Dr. Miner." And I said, yeah, I'm the founder. And he said, I need some help with my miners in the back. And then he opened the door and he had like five miners literally sitting there. And I mean, with the whiskey bottles, on top of the whiskey bottles. I mean, I'm not joking.
Did you help him out? Did you like fix his miners for him?
You don't do tech support. He got my number, and then he shipped two of the miners to our shop for us to fix it. I don't know what happened at the end. I think that we did it. I think that he's running them right now.
Is he using your pool?
Yeah, it's this is the thing. I asked him, which pool are you using? I mean, people don't know because they're mining in their houses. They don't know what a pool is even. I mean, they just know they have to use it. Whoever helped them to install it, they told them, you have to use this. Many people here use Binance Pool, not because of the pool, but because of the P2P, because people are exchanging whatever they mine, they're exchanging it daily to buy bread, to buy coffee, to buy daily food, or I mean, they get paid every 3 days, so they need to change it quickly. So they use Binance Pool typically the small miners use that pool. So, but at the end, we told them, well, you can use our pool and just connect your Binance P2P wallet to our pool and the money will go directly there. So that's like a education process that we have to go through. That's not easy to develop, but I mean, we have time. I mean, we're not in a hurry. We will do it slowly. We will educate. There's one thing that the government wants to erase. I mean, they want to crack down domestic mining. I mean, not cracking down, but regulate like tightly, because there's some people who, you know, cross limits. There's people that, I mean, you have 5 kilowatt installed in your house, and you have air conditioner, a fridge, So you cannot connect more than one miner to miner. So some people connect 10. So they get the power from the neighbor. So then they exploit the transformers in the streets. So I understand that from the government regulator, but I think they can just, you know, try to make sure that people are, I mean, educate people that they cannot install more than two in their houses, but not cracking it down. Because at the end, it's like I always say, I mean, Venezuela has number one oil reserve in the world. And we say that to everybody, everywhere we go. And I mean, if I'm in Europe and I'm in the States, people tell me or I say that we have the largest oil reserves. We have the largest resources. We are a rich country, but that has never been transformed into reality. I mean, into benefits for the people. And the mining machines in the houses of the people is a way for the people to get a piece of that oil, you know, to get to transform, I don't know, a liter of that oil into money directly to them that they can transform into food and benefits for the family. So I don't think it's a good idea to crack down domestic mining. I mean, because it's fair. Domestic mining is distributing our wealth to people in their houses directly without any intermediary. So I'm going to be fighting for them until the end. This is on the process right now. It's been discussed, but I'm on the domestic mining team 100%.
Yeah, for sure. Us too. I think like, even if you go, friends I have that mine at home, like you go to most North American mining homes, I guess you would see probably like two, maybe three, five ASICs like that. And on average, like some people obviously have sheds in their backyard with a bunch more, but especially here, we don't have like, you know, many 220, 240 volt outlets in our homes. So you gotta do a little bit of legwork first before you get set up with mining. And of course, all the noise and the heat are super annoying. It's interesting to hear like how common at-home mining is. Nick, like same question to you. I kind of want to know Will's original question, like has currency and economic issues boosted interest in Bitcoin mining? And then also sort of what we were just talking about, can you give us a rundown on like, is at-home mining super common? Like, and how are people managing power needs and noise and heat and all the things that come along with mining if you're, you know, going to put it in your garage or basement or backyard?
Absolutely. So in terms of retail, using crypto as a retail tool to exchange crypto for goods or services, I think that's pretty much non-existent in Argentina right now, given that in stores, the peso has maintained a certain value. Obviously, there's a lot of inflation. The peso is losing a lot of value compared to other international currencies, but it hasn't come to an extreme where prices are changing day to day. It's something that they change month to month. They change from one month to another. Imported stuff definitely changes quite a bit more. But in terms of production and retail, I don't see too much use of crypto. What I do see is a lot of programmers who work freelance and who work for companies outside of Argentina are using crypto as a tool to get their money to the country or basically to just conserve the value. So they change part of what they charged and keep another part in crypto. So basically, I think it's more of a conservation of value than actually making life easier and having a currency that isn't as volatile. I think Bitcoin recently hasn't been covering that need specifically, given that the price is quite volatile. It's high, it's great, that's fantastic, but it doesn't make life easier compared to the peso, given that it's less volatile than Bitcoin. So I think that's basically why there's a certain resistance. USDT and a lot of stable coins are used for international transactions and used for transactions versus the dollar. It's easier and it's faster. It doesn't involve that much paperwork. So that's definitely something that's being more adopted. Stable coins are something that are quite adopted in Argentine culture and Argentine transactions. And in terms of in-home mining, from what I've been seeing, there's quite a large adoption of rigs more than ASICs. I haven't seen too many operations or haven't seen too many articles in terms of operations or houses that have ASIC. What I've seen quite a bit of from friends from different places is they have GPU mining. They have, now that's coming in quite fast, is storage mining, which would be Chia, for example. So that's basically what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing too much of ASIC, given that I'm based in Buenos Aires usually, so it's apartments. It's a lot easier to have something set up with GPUs compared to having an ASIC, given that if you're in an apartment, it's going to echo. It's going to be loud. There's nothing you can do with the noise unless you do immersion cooling, and that's not happening anytime soon in terms of home mining.
Awesome. So I want to go back to an earlier comment from Juan talking about the Chinese miners moving into South America. And of course, it's coming up on like the 3-month anniversary soonish of that coming out of China and this, you know, diaspora of Chinese miners moving all over the world. And there was a huge focus on miners going to North America specifically. And we saw those numbers bump up a decent amount if you look at like Foundry Pool, for example. But we also saw that a lot of those numbers were probably misunderstood. So there's a lot of miners coming online from previous orders from manufacturers that are now hitting the racks in North America or elsewhere. And we're understanding that a lot of these Chinese miners have decided to hold onto their machines or are looking in different areas of the world to put their machines. So I want to know from your guys' perspective, when you see this Chinese capital come into your markets, what is the first reaction to that? And then what has that kind of transcended into? Are you guys working actively with either pools or miners specifically or financial teams that are placing these miners in your guys' area? Are you guys welcoming them with open arms, or are they just added competition in the space? Nick, I want to start with you, and then Juan, move over to you for the same question.
Perfect. In terms of competition, we don't take any miners competition. We're all just, we get what we make in terms of mining. So it's not something that we consider competition. The biggest issue that we see with the Chinese miners is that basically they're just looking to get power as quickly as possible, as cheaply as possible, without taking into account political aspects of it, regional aspects of it. It's just sending the miners and doing colocation. In Argentina, basically what's happening is, like you said, it's being misinterpreted. It's not that Chinese miners are making it to Argentina. We have orders from November, October of last year that we're receiving now. So that's basically the hash rate that you're seeing climb up. In terms of receiving Chinese miners, I doubt that they'll have any available capacity within the next, I don't know, 8 to 10 months, given that any large miner already had everything planned out since last year in terms of purchasing and filling their capacity. So I don't see too many Chinese miners making it into Argentina, given that if there's an operation that was planning to have power by this time, they probably already have miners to fill that capacity. In terms of collocation, I don't see it as a core business in Argentina, given how complicated it is to import things. The thing is, if you're doing collocation, you'd have to import the miners, put a monetary value on them, justify a payment out or a payment in, or what's happening, what the transaction is in terms of collocation, because you can't send miners to Argentina and say, oh, they were free, we're just going to plug them in and start mining. You have to justify why those miners are being imported, what's going to happen with them, what the transaction is. And right now there isn't basically the scaffolding for that, to import miners for free and say, oh no, I'm selling them the service of plugging them in, maintaining them, and having the miner work. So in terms of Argentina, I don't really see it as a possibility from a legal standpoint and from a business standpoint either.
Awesome. Juan, I'm going to throw the same question to you. What's it been like when you guys are bringing in Chinese miners and Chinese capitalists? I'm looking at Venezuela or other places you operate in. Has it generally been kind of welcoming from an industry standpoint, or maybe from your guys' standpoint from Dr. Miner? Or do you guys see them as competition, or are you just welcoming them to the space just as another Bitcoin miner who's securing the network?
Yeah, no, I mean, for us, I think, I mean, I've been called stubborn many times for trying to make Venezuela happen as a hosting location, as a mining location, not only from international people, but also for Venezuelan crypto people. Some of them may be listening to me now, so I'm going to continue to be stubborn about it. I do think that Chinese miners have an opportunity here. I don't think we're going to get 50% or 20% of that Chinese hash rate, but I think some percentage, I would say at least 5%, maybe 10. It can be surprising. Depends on how it goes. The tests that we're gonna deploy now, we're gonna start some tests with some Chinese miners. As Nick says, this is a process that's gonna take at least 6 to 8 months to start connecting them at scale at least. We do have construction going on right now, mining infrastructure construction going on right now, that will probably be ready by the end of this year, that is meant to be available for Chinese hash rate or any other international hash rate, because unexpectedly, we've had many and a lot of interest from European miners or European investors, and also American investors, since the mining disrupt. So at the end, at this moment, I'm like I have more power. It's more like a seller's market than a buyer's market. The Chinese miners are, as Will said, they're looking for extremely cheap prices. Even if I give them the cheapest price in the world, they still try to negotiate and get the best, the most benefits out of the business. Like everybody will do, but I mean, it looks like they want to squeeze as much as possible. But fortunately, I have interest from other Western investors that I'm able to turn them down or turn down their offers. And at the end, they come back to me and say, okay, sorry, you're right. Okay, I accept your offer. Because at the beginning they were saying, I just go to Kazakhstan. It's easier for me. It's closer. And then I found out that Kazakhstan, they do offer cheap prices and they do are extremely closer to China, but they don't have that much capacity. They don't have that much excess capacity available. Well, Venezuela has at least 1,000, 1,500, not built, but in energy wise. So for me, with these tests, I will see if Chinese miners are happy with what we do. I think with Dr. Miner and hopefully with other private companies in Venezuela, because the good thing is that the government regulator is expecting international investors with open arms. I mean, every time some Chinese client comes here, there are already two that have already come last month. They've received them in the office. I mean, they offer them all the benefits and everything that they needed. The visa, we get the visa for them easily, because the government is open for international investors, because they know this industry is one of the only industries that are making money or are creating or producing income for the country. And they know that like private companies have a limited capacity for growing, but if we leverage with international investors, we can expand faster and produce more, create more employment, and transform our resources and use our resources more efficiently. So all these things and all this also legal framework that I have already clarified and that I understand we have already executed successfully, still, in my mind, make Venezuela a potential place for Chinese hash rate to be distributed here and installed here. Paraguay also, we're also working with Paraguay. We're about to start a 2-megawatt farm in Paraguay to test the market there. Electricity price is not as cheap, but most Chinese clients also ask us to do like a mix. Okay, I go to Venezuela, but I also want to go to Paraguay. So I average the electricity price between both, and then I can test both sites and see which one works better for me, and also diversify. At the end, it's not good to send all the hash rate to one location after what happened in China. It's intelligent to diversify and distribute it in different areas and locations.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. I think that might be one of the biggest misconceptions. That fact might be one of the biggest misconceptions in terms of all this hash rate leaving China. Like there's some miners, but mostly just crypto people in general, they think, oh, well, everything that leaves China is going to come to the US and Canada. And that's definitely not the case. It's not only is it spread across, are they wanting to spread their machines across a bunch of different jurisdictions, the US, Canada, different countries in Latin America, Eastern Europe, parts of Africa. But some of it just, they don't want any of it in the US or Canada for different reasons. I guess we're coming up here close to time. And I know Will has one final question he wants to wrap up with. But before we get to that, I kind of want to squeeze a little bit of free alpha out of you guys in a way. I want to know, so we've talked about a ton of different angles of Latin American mining, specifically in Venezuela and Argentina. I want to know, what is the biggest unrealized opportunity or unexploited opportunity for miners in Venezuela or Argentina or elsewhere in Latin America that people aren't really talking about, aren't really noticing. And I realize maybe you don't want to give too many specifics if you're working with it now, but just at a high general level, what's the biggest unrealized opportunity that people aren't really taking notice of for miners? Nick, I'll pass it first to you and then to Juan.
So in terms of miners, I think that South America has basically the same that the US and Canada have to offer. They have large energy infrastructure. Most countries have a large electrical grid as well. They're ready to absorb the miners. I think that what's stopping most miners from going to South America is the political aspect, or not being used to the political aspect, given that the US has a different way of working, Canada has a different way of working. I think they're slowly starting to look a little bit more like Latin America. But basically, I think what scares them off is the political aspect. But their countries, they're civilized countries, they're countries that are ready to absorb. There's fiber optic almost everywhere. There's power grids almost everywhere. So basically, it's that. I think it's comparable to any other infrastructure that I've seen anywhere else in the world.
Sorry about that. I was muted. Juan, same question to you. In terms of biggest unrealized opportunity, what are you looking at?
Yeah, no, I have to agree 100% with Nick. I think there's huge potential, energy potential in all across Latin America. Maybe only Argentina, Paraguay, and Venezuela are the ones that have, you know, give a step forward, but all the other countries also have huge excess capacity. Venezuela has, using oil and gas turbines, we have around 10,000 megawatts lying there wasted because of maintenance or something that, I mean, it requires investment and it requires interest and it requires believing in the opportunity. But of course, what's stopping investors, international investors specifically, it's the political aspect. Same in Paraguay, even though many people are going to Paraguay for mining, there's still a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen when they regulate mining, because for the information that I have from some politicians there, there's going to be a law being submitted proposed next year to regulate electricity prices for miners. And we still don't know what the electricity rate's going to be. We still don't know what the legal process is going to be for mining. So there's a lot of uncertainty because, of course, people have a bad perception about Latin America in terms of politics, bureaucracy and stuff. But in terms of energy resources, as Nick says, and I think at the end, mining is about energy. And if mining is about energy, I think Latin America is extremely attractive. Energy is what we have.
Awesome. So we're going to finish the conversation here with a few predictions. So we started with shill your bags, and now it's time to kind of guess where the market is going. So in terms of hash rate before the next halving in 2024, what percentage of hash rate will come from South America? We'd give you guys like 10 seconds to think about that, but it's a question we've been kind of asking all our guests. Nick, I'm going to throw it to you first. What percentage, or at least maybe like, go ahead. Sorry.
Between 15 and 20%.
Hells yeah. That's awesome.
Ballpark.
That's a healthy,
that's a good jump.
Sure.
Yeah. That's a good jump from like the Cambridge study right now too.
I think there's going to be a lot of growth. There's a lot of attention being brought to South America. I think it's definitely something that will happen. I think it'll be around there.
You also have bit farms, I guess, part of that growth, setting up a huge new farm in Argentina. We were talking about Chinese miners migrating over, but even like Chinese miners aside, you have a bunch of other people or miners from other regions migrating to South and Latin America. Contributing to that growth.
Yeah. And it's also surprising how many Latin Americans participate in founding miners all over the world, or managing, or have some kind of role in those companies. So I think we're going to be seeing a lot of them coming back to basics, coming back to home, and starting to mine back at their local countries.
That's awesome.
Juan, give us that number.
Yeah, well,
are you more bullish?
I don't want to copy Nick, but the first number that came to my mind after you say, "Yo, you have 10 seconds," the first number that came to mind was 20%. Maybe more, but I think 20% is a fair number for after the halving. It's like 2 years away, 2-3 years away, sorry. I think the growth is going to be exponential here in South America because, as I said, there are many tests going on that if they go well, they're going to be transforming to 10 times larger sizes. So at least for me in Venezuela and for my friends who are mining in Paraguay, who are building farms for Chinese clients, if they do well with their tests, they will be able to exceed their capacity by 5, 7, or even 10 times the size. So I think 20% is a fair number for Latin America, for South America specifically. Not even Latin, but South. Because South doesn't include El Salvador and Mexico. Only, I don't know if you gringos know what the difference is.
No, you heard it here first. Okay, 20% by next halving, 2024. Otherwise, Nick owes us some of those Argentinian steaks on the house.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There we go.
More than
I want some of those.
I want to thank you both for being on the stream, and thank you to all our listeners. We stream twice a week, Wednesdays and Fridays. Subscribe to Compass Mining on our YouTube channel. You can also watch us on Twitch, and then subscribe to Mining Memo, which is a twice a week newsletter on everything about mining that you should know about. Juan, Nick, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. This was packed full of information, and I definitely hope that some reporters pick up on some of the stories in here, because Latin America and mining is definitely an underreported part of the ecosystem. But thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
This was a ton of fun. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for the great show.
Thank you.
And I think that's a wrap. Thanks, guys.